Well, I'm very excited about this topic. It's something that I have been working on for a long time, going back to, I think, 1988. I believe I've told you some of the story before about when I first was living in Ohio and had three children and didn't have a job. And and so I knew that I had been abundantly sharing for very faithfully for a long time, but hadn't really seen the results that I thought God promised in the Word. And so I took like a whole year to do every kind of word study I could think of on the whole topic of giving. And I learned so much during that year, and God really blessed our lives and our family during that time. And there was another period of time when a similar thing had gone on, and I said, you know, I probably don't really know everything there is to know about giving, although I'd seen a lot of tremendous results. So I decided to study it again, and that's when that giving book got written. And it just seemed to be a series all the way from back in Genesis through the New Testament. And so that's how that book had come together. Well, about 6 months ago, I was thinking about the topic again and realizing, you know what? You don't really know everything there is to know about this. So it just made me go back to the Word again. And I found some really wonderful resources, which are back in the bookstore, that I've been reading over the last several months. And so this series came out of that study, and it's not the be-all, end-all, and I'm certain there is much more to learn. But what I really want to do during this time is to pose some sticky questions and endeavor to answer them from the Word and to seek from the application of the Word how we can live this kind of giving today in our culture. Because you have the Old Testament version, which we don't live in, right? And we're not under the law. But the New Testament was written in the first century, and we don't live in the Roman times either. And so there has to be an application of the truth that's in the New Testament to our lives that's easy to see. So that's what I would like to look at and endeavor to discover. The other thing that we'd like to do is that during the weekly fellowships, after each teaching, there will be things that we can pursue, and it will be more of a discussion time and a time to ask questions, to say, well, I didn't understand this, or let's look at this a little bit more carefully. And hopefully also a lot of what will be sharing will generate some thoughts in your heart about, wow, I could just tweak it, my giving a little bit like this, and see some tremendous things that God has promised. So today, this is going to be a three-part teaching. And the first and last parts are not too long, so, you know, it's not going to go on forever. But I want you to open to Philippians chapter 4, because in Philippians, this shows us the pattern of giving. And we'll start in verse 15. Now, Philippi was one of the first churches, the first church that Paul went to when he went to Macedonia. So later when we read 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9, we're going to see that Paul uses the Macedonians as a really great example of giving. So it's also in Philippians here. So verse 15. Now ye Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church communicated with me as concerning giving and receiving, but ye only. So hence you've got the title, Concerning Giving and Receiving. Trusting God concerning giving and receiving. Now, this word communicated is really interesting because it's the word koinoneo, and we usually translate it fellowship or sharing. And here it's translated communicated, so you don't really get the idea that it's talking about a sharing. No church shared with me as concerning or about the matter of giving and receiving, but you only. So this is what they did. Verse 16. For even in Thessalonica, which was the next city that Paul had gone to after Philippi, you sent once and again unto my necessity. Not because I desire a gift, but I desire fruit that may abound to your account. But I have all and abound, and I am full, having received of Epaphroditus the things that were sent from you, an order of a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God. So not only had the Philippians given to Paul when he was on his missionary journey, and he had gone to Thessalonica and continued on, this is much later when Paul is in prison, and now, again, the Philippians got a gift together and sent it by way of Epaphroditus to bring to Paul in prison to take care of him. So for many, many years, from the beginning of the gospel and how it had moved in Greece until the end of Paul's life, it appears that the Philippians were very concerned about sharing and fellowshipping with Paul in the gospel. And so he uses them as this example of the pattern of giving. The ESV of verse 15, it says, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving except you only. So the whole Philippian church as a whole entered into partnership with Paul. And another really interesting thing in the Aramaic translation is that no church communicated with me in the matter of receiving and giving. It changes it around, and it puts receiving first and then giving. And that is actually the pattern, because you can't give something you don't have, right? All right, so you need to receive something first, and then you can give. It's that way with when you're talking about money, or you're talking about love, you're talking about grace. It's you have to receive first, and the fundamental thing we have to remember through this whole study is that God so loved the world that He
gave.
Okay, God is the giver; He's the one who set this pattern. So there had to be somebody who started the whole thing out, right? So God says He was the one. He was the giver when He made the heavens and the earth. He's the one who spoke it into being so we could have it. So there is a receiving that happens first. Okay, then when Paul was in Thessalonica, they sent once and again for his need. So the second part is this open-handed giving. You have something, and then you open your hands and you give it. Now, actually, you could keep it in your hand because you still have it, right, in your hand. You don't really give it until you let it go. That's why this is a picture of the hands on the book. It's because those are actually Sarah and Stephen's hands. Sarah is letting something go into Stephen's hand. That's giving. It's not really giving until you let it go. And then 17, verse 17 is talking about, I desire fruit that may abound to your account. And it's portraying this like an accounting thing. So most of you know that I'm a bookkeeper and I like to keep all the right, you know, figures of everything and count it all up all the time. And that's what I do for a living. So this makes a lot of sense to me, because your bank account has to have something in it before you can give anything out of it, right? It doesn't do very good if you just write a blank check and say, oh, I'm sorry, there really wasn't that in there. But what happens when it's talking about fruit, it means profit. What happens with giving, and this is the pattern, is that you receive something, then you open-handedly give it away and let it go, then actually there appears some profit in your bank account that you didn't earn or you didn't put there. It's fruit. It's results. It's something that happens because of the giving. It'd be like, you know, if you went online and you checked your bank balance and went, oh, whoa, I got $1,000 extra in there than I thought. Where did it come from? Well, that's the wonderful thing about this pattern of giving, is that the way God set it up is that when we release something from our hands, we actually get a profit back in our account. And so it's kind of it's something that's foreign or opposite to our own logic, because our logic says that if you give something away, you're actually poor, right? Well, if I write a check for $1,000, you know what? It's deducted from my bank account. It's not there anymore. I can't turn around and write another check for $1,000 unless there's another $1,000 in there. So this is why it's something that it's a principle that God set up, which isn't always so logical to our minds. And the profit does appear even though we did not earn it. So then go down to verse 19. This is the result of this whole pattern of giving, is that, but my God shall supply all your need according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus. The word supply there means to fill up to the top. So, you know, I think about my bank account. I want it to be full up to the top, you know? How big would you like your bank account? Well, then how big would you like to practice this pattern of giving? Because it works. And the other thing to see here is that it's talking about our need, right? And I found this really wonderful definition of the word need, is that you can translate it business or employment. So a need is not necessarily money. Okay? My God shall supply all your need. Well, if you need a job, then he'll supply a job. Like Joey, you just found that out, right? God, you had a need, God supplied it. There's other people who are still looking for jobs. And that's a need. That is a need. It's not to have money per se. You see what I'm saying? A need, you know, our basic needs are food, shelter, and clothing. But I don't know about you, other people, most people in our culture think a cell phone is a need, a car is a need. There's a lot of other needs, you know, that we have just because we live in 21st century America, you know. And I would put those in the category of need in order to function. So it's not just, you know, like to get by. That's not what it's talking about, even when it's talking about needs. And if you need a job or you need a car, a lot of times the profit will come exactly in that way and not necessarily in the money to go buy it. So that's important to see, first of all, that you receive. Okay, this is a pattern. You receive first, then you give. Then there's profit back to you, okay, because you're holding out your hands. There's profit back to you, so you take that profit, right? Your need is met. Well, what do you do then? Okay, give it out again, because then it becomes a flow, and that's why it's called a sharing or a partnership. Many, many times we call giving abundant sharing. Did you ever wonder why? Because it's communicating, it's sharing, it's fellowshipping. That's where we got the term sharing out of it. Sharing or communicating of our abundance. But it's not just a one-way thing, like you always communicate here. But it's God communicating back to you, then you communicating. So it's this process of receive, give, receive, give, receive, give. And it becomes a really cool flow. And also, so that's an important point there to remember, is that if we give money, okay, then you're not necessarily going to get money back. You're going to get your need met. All right? So that's the first teaching. In Acts chapter 2, look at Acts chapter 2, verse 44. And this will just kind of summarize this section here. As soon as the people got born again in Acts chapter 2 on the day of Pentecost, so there were about 3,000 people on that very first day who got born again, they began giving. verse 42, and they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship. They have fellowship, okay? The first thing that they start seeing about fellowship was that it's all wrapped up in giving. Breaking of bread and prayers, and fear came upon every soul. You know, not ooh, fear, but awe. And many wonders and signs were done by the apostles. And all that believed were together and had all things common. Now, that didn't mean they set up a big commune, you know, where everybody sold everything and then lived together and, you know, shared everything together. Like, that's communism, or what somebody's idea, you know, of the hippie age of being in a commune was, that you didn't have anything, right? That word "in common" is actually from, it's related to the word koinonia. It's koinos. It means shared, or shared inside the group. They had all things common, meaning that they shared within this group that had formed. So they began giving to each other. So some, and it says, okay, they sold their possessions and goods and parted them to all men as every man had need. So if I had some extra clothes, whatever, I sold them and gave them to someone who had a need in that area. So there began to be a sharing and a communicating among the church. Isn't that cool to see? So now, okay, what about abundance? Because, you know, it's all well and good that Philippians 4 says God will supply all your need. And I don't know about you, but I've been at plenty of places in my life where I was just barely getting by, and I didn't have a whole lot of abundance. So every time they would say abundant sharing and going, yeah, where is it? You know, I don't have it to give. You know? So, this is where the rubber meets the road. Okay. This is where it's the sticky question. Okay. We can believe pretty easily that God's going to supply our needs, right? But what is God's view of prosperity? And that's why now you have a piece of paper on your chair, because this topic is really broad, and this is the one that you can continue to study on next week. So I wrote out the verses so we would be able to look them up pretty quickly, and you could see the buildup of the logic of the points that I discovered by doing a really detailed word study on the word prosperity and to prosper. So that's where this comes from. And so I think you're going to be really blessed to see what God's idea of prosperity is and how do we get it. You ready? Okay, point number one. God owns everything and we own nothing. Deuteronomy 10:14 says, "Behold, to the Lord your God belong heaven and the heaven of heavens, the earth and all that is in it." Well, if God owns all the earth, then he owns all the earth, right? And we just get to steward it. See, we don't really ever own anything. Even if you say, well, I own my house or I own a car. Well, do you really own it or does the bank own it? You know, I mean, in our culture, we use things. Really, that's really how we live. We have some clothes, yeah, but, you know, we use them. And so in God's perspective, okay, everything belongs to him. The silver is mine. That's from Haggai 2:8. The silver is mine and the gold is mine. So that means money belongs to God too. That's really interesting, isn't it? Psalm 24:1 is another one that says, "The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and those who dwell therein." So even people and their lives belong to God. That's his view, is that everything belongs to him. So now, point number two. The ability to get wealth and riches also comes from him, only from him. Deuteronomy 8:17. This is talking in this section about how God had delivered them from the bondage of Egypt and brought them into a land of milk and honey. And, you know, when you get to the place that you have lots of wealth and you have plenty of vineyards and plenty of stuff, then don't do this. Verse 17, and thou say in thy heart, my power and the might of my hand hath gotten me this wealth. But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he swore unto thy fathers as it is this day. The thing about when you get to the place where you do have a little bit of abundance, and there's some money in your bank account, that's the time you have to remember and say to yourself, wait a minute, God owns everything. I didn't have any ability to get this money. It was God who taught me how to do it. And this is a very simple example, but back when I was at first, had left headquarters and was on my own, I didn't have a job and I didn't really have a skill, a marketable skill at that point. And so I met this lady who invited me to come, you know, to do one of those clothing demonstrations in her house. So I got to try on all these beautiful dresses and stuff. And then she showed me that she was trying to start this business out of her home, right? But she wasn't the kind of person who kept track of dollars and cents very well. And she had been working on this for probably 4 months or something like that. She had this gigantic shoebox of receipts and stuff, and she goes, hey Jen, do you think that you could, have you ever heard about this program called Quicken? Maybe you could help me sort through these receipts. I'm really no good at this stuff, and maybe you could figure it out. And so I looked at it and I said, well, maybe I could. And that's actually how I started in accounting. I had no formal training at all. Somebody just asked me, can you do this? And I said, well, I'll give it a try. And I found that it came really easily to me, and to learn the program, you know, was a snap. So I've been using Quicken and QuickBooks ever since that day. But see, God gives us the ability. He's the one who led me to that opportunity and then said, here you go. It was his long view, God's long view, that would turn into a life's work for me. I had no idea. All I was doing was saying, sure, I'll volunteer to try that. And by the way, the lady paid me like $6 an hour, which at that time was like, wow, that's really a lot of money. Okay, I think I can do this. This might be lucrative here. Oh gosh, how funny. Anyway, it's God who owns everything, and he also gives us the ability to do and to get wealth. Isaiah 48:17 is another wonderful one. Thus saith the Lord, thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, I am the Lord thy God, which teaches thee to profit. God actually teaches us to profit, which leadeth thee by the way that thou should go. This past summer, I also did something real, you know, really unusual, because most of you know that I've, you know, been publishing books for a long time, and the purpose of publishing books is so you can sell a few, right? Well, when I started going into this topic again, I realized, it would not hurt to be giving away a few of these translations. So I started on a program where I was systematically giving some away over a period of time. And last month, I had the most sales I have had ever. And so it proved it again to me that when you open your hand and you release something, then it gets profited back to you. So in that sense, God was teaching me how to profit in light of the word ministry. I love this verse too. Psalm 35:27. Let them shout for joy and be glad that favor my righteous cause. Yea, let them say continually, let the Lord be magnified, which has pleasure in the prosperity of his servant. God has pleasure in prosperity. Woo-hoo, that's a little bit different view than just, at least how I had thought of it was, well, God just wants to meet your need. That's it. He really does have pleasure in prosperity and in abundance. And the reason has to do with the fact that if you have more abundance, you have more to give, right? You can't give away something you don't have. So if you have an abundance, then you have more that you're able to give. And if God is saying that in the Old Testament, it's Psalms, right? Then what about us being sons? Is he going to have pleasure in the prosperity of his sons too? Wouldn't you want your child, if you have children, wouldn't you want them to be prosperous? You do. You want to give them everything that you can. And so that's the way God looks at us too. Okay, point number three. God's blessings carry no sorrow with them. And that's in Proverbs 10:22. The blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. The common verse that's always used about, you know, you should stay in poverty is that the love of money is the root of all evil. So we don't want to go there because there's evil associated with money. So no, that's not true. The evil is associated with the love of money. And if you read that whole section there, you'll see the last verse of 1 Timothy 6:10 is, for the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But the promise of God is that the blessing of the Lord, if it comes from God, then there won't be any sorrow with it. The reason that can happen is because of, back in the top part of verse 7 there, read that. And we brought nothing into this world. See, that's the same thing. God owns everything, we own nothing. And it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. The key to it is contentment. And that's the whole context of Philippians chapter 4, what that Paul was talking about when he was talking about how the Philippians had given to him and how blessed he was about that. Because he says, I know how to abase and I know how to abound. I've been in both situations, but I've been content in each one. Why? Because he was trusting God concerning the giving and receiving. He was trusting that God would take care of him and bring him into abundance so that he would have to give at another opportunity. It's the fact, the love of money is the root of all evil, right? So with the love of money, there comes sorrow. With money by itself, it's not necessarily sorrow if it's used and you do it with contentment. Where you're not always thinking, the coveting part, see, is always thinking about, well, but I want this, and gosh, I wish I had a bigger TV, and I wish I had this, and I wish I had that. Where the focus becomes the stuff, the possessions themselves, or the money itself. So if we trust in our bank account, well, my bank account has, you know, $20,000 in it, so I'm set. You know how fast that $20,000 can disappear? Gone, like that, right? Okay, so we can't trust in the money per se or our possessions. We have to trust in God. And when we do, then when he brings abundance, there won't be any sorrow with it. Isn't that cool? Point number four. Real prosperity results from fear of the Lord and seeking him with all of our heart. Proverbs 22:4 says, by humility and the fear of the Lord are riches, honor, and life. And Psalm 84, for the Lord God is a sun and a shield, and the Lord will give grace and glory. No good thing will he withhold from them that walk uprightly. Isn't that a great promise? No good thing will he withhold from them who walk uprightly. So here's the point where I got to ask you. What are the things that you feel that you still need? And where would you like to have more abundance? Because it's God's promise that we could have abundance, right? But most of us, including me, are still back on the need part. So I got to deal with the need thing first. What he promises to meet our need according to his riches and glory, right? So if there's a need in my life that's not being met, I'm not talking about money only, anything, whether it's health, you know, wisdom, whatever we need, then I got to deal with that first. And then work on changing my mind to line up with these principles so that I can get to the place where it's not just need met, it's abundance and prosperity. Because that truly is what God has promised us. So Psalm 112 is just really, really wonderful. It says, "Praise ye the Lord. Blessed is the man that feareth the Lord, that delighteth greatly in his commandments." So when we put God first and we seek his face, we've been talking about this a lot, right? About what it means to fear God, what it means to want the blesser, not just the blessing. So you delight greatly in his commandments or in his word. His seed shall be mighty upon earth. The generation of the upright shall be blessed. Wealth and riches shall be in his house, and his righteousness endures forever. So if you had a doubt about whether we really are supposed to have wealth and riches, that's the answer. It's a promise, but it's a promise that's contingent upon our fearing God first. That's why it's seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be gathered unto you, right? Remember the story about the rich man in Matthew 19? When he came to Jesus, he says, how can I get eternal life? And Jesus says unto him, well, have you been doing the commandments? And he goes, yeah, I follow the commandments all the time. Honor thy father and mother, you know. Put God first, right? He said he thought he was putting God first. And Jesus said, well, then go sell all your possessions and give them to the poor. And he went, what? Actually, Jesus didn't say sell all your possessions. He just said sell some possessions. So he wasn't even asking the man to get rid of everything. He was just asking him to sell some and give. He said, the one area that you really don't understand is you don't understand this flow here. You're doing all the right things and you think that you're worshiping God, but you don't understand that the flow has to happen for you to get the things that you really want to have in your life. And the man went away sorrowful because he had much possessions. So in that illustration, the possessions owned him. Instead of him realizing that God owned everything and that he was just the steward. He went away sorrowful and he didn't get to see what God had in store for him. Okay, now we're at point number 5. So what is God's view of prosperity? Prosper means to accomplish satisfactorily what is intended or to have success. That's what it means to prosper. And you know our favorite verse that we use many, many times, 3 John 2. Beloved, I wish above all things that you may prosper and be in health, even as your soul prospereth. But we never really go on to read verse 3. So go read verse 3. For I rejoiced greatly when the brethren came and testified of the truth that is in thee, even as thou walkest in the truth. The contingent part about prospering is even as your soul prospers. And that your soul, your life, will prosper when you walk in the truth. And you walk, fear God, you put him first. You seek him. Psalm 1 is also a great one, that section about delight yourself in the Lord. You'll be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth its fruit in its season, and whatsoever you do will
prosper.
It will accomplish satisfactorily that which is intended. So what's intended? God's view of prosperity is that what's intended is that we have plenty, and we have plenty to be able to give. That's what his intention is. And I love this part too. Proverbs 8, 17 and 18 is the section where it personifies wisdom and makes it be like wisdom as a woman. And she says, I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. Riches and honor are with me, yea, durable riches and righteousness. Another section that's talking about wisdom is that she holds riches in one hand and long life in her other hand. So the point is that if we fear God and we seek after wisdom, the result actually will be riches and long life. If we seek after riches and long life first, it brings sorrow. So there's a whole chapter in my giving book that if you don't have one, you can come and tell me, and I'm going to bring a bunch more of them next week, but there are quite a few back there. It's, let's see, chapter 6, called What is True Prosperity? And there is a beautiful statement in here that's a definition from the Theological Word Book of the Old Testament, and I think it's worthwhile pondering. It says, real prosperity results from the work of God in the life of one who seeks God with all his heart. Because prosperity is in many other categories too besides actual money. It's in success. It's in getting to do and feel satisfied with what you've accomplished, for example, in your job, or lots of different things that are wrapped up in that whole idea of success. And if you study the men in the Old Testament too, for example, Joseph, he got sold into slavery by his brothers and ends up in Egypt working for this guy named Potiphar. The very first thing that God says about Joseph is that the Lord prospered him because he was with him. How could he be prosperous? He just lost everything. He doesn't have anything of his own, right? But he knew that the Lord was with him, teaching him. And Joseph ends up being second in command to the Pharaoh of Egypt. It doesn't make sense. When you have nothing, you really have everything. When you give something away, it looks like you should be poor, but you really are made rich. I love it. God has such a great sense of humor. Oh, gosh. Okay, the last part, just briefly, I want you to open your Bible to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Because now that we've seen that the purpose of prosperity is to have something to give, I want you to see also not only that this is the pattern, but that grace has everything to do with it in our administration. So chapter 8, verse 1. I'm actually going to read some of it. You can follow along, but I'm going to read it from the Amplified, okay? We want to tell you further, brethren, about the grace, the favor and spiritual blessing of God, which has been evident in the churches of Macedonia. Oh, Macedonia? Who was those again? The Philippians. They were one of them. And what had happened was the grace aroused in them the desire to give alms. For in the midst of an ordeal of severe tribulation, their abundance of joy and their depth of poverty together have overflowed in a wealth of lavish generosity on their part. So people use this example of the Macedonians, say, see, they were poor, and yet they gave anyway. So reach in your pocketbook and give us, you know, your tithe, right? That's not why they're being used as an example. It's saying that even though they didn't have a lot, what God had done, because they received grace, and then they saw a need in the churches in Jerusalem, and they wanted to be able to give towards it. So even verse 3 says, out of their, according to their ability, yea, beyond their ability, they gave. So they opened up their hands, and they went, well, we don't have that much, but look at, God has caused such joy in our lives in so many categories. We want to do something. So they went, here, and they let it go. Begging us, verse 4, most insistently for the favor and the fellowship of contributing in this ministration for the relief and the support of the saints in Jerusalem. And not was this gift of theirs merely the contribution that we expected, but first they gave themselves to the Lord and then to us. It goes on, it says something. It's like it's a summary. The reason why they were so generous and why they really were able to open their hands, even though they didn't have a whole lot, was because they first gave their hearts to the Lord. Isn't that what we saw about it from the Old Testament? And because they wanted the fellowship. They wanted to be connected and share with the church that was in Jerusalem in a koinonia type of sharing. So they gave to that. All right, so just in summary here, that's why you have to have grace be involved, because go over to chapter 9 and see verse 8. You have something in your hand, you open it up, and then I like to call it grace giving because you want to have fellowship with someone else so you communicate with them, right? Then God gives fruit back into your account. I got something back. So now I have more to give. And then this is what happens, chapter 9, verse 8. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that you have all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. So you see here those words, abundance, abound, abounding. Don't focus on the sufficiency part. The sufficiency word there is important too. That's having your need met, right? That's what God promises. Sufficiency, right? Okay, but it's also that when grace gets poured back out to you, then all of a sudden starts to be abundance. And when this flow continues, there's more abundance back to you, then you give more, then there's more abundance back to you. And so that's why I call it grace giving. And what it takes to trust God in that is to just begin. He's the giver. God is the giver, right? That's where it all starts. God so loved the world that he gave. We want to be imitators of him as dear children. So if we allow the flow of giving to start, then it will abound back to us, where there'll be more and more and more grace being poured out. So let's end with verse 11 there, because 9 and 10 are a parenthesis, right? So you can just go right to verse 11. Say, being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causes through us thanksgiving to God. That's the end result of all this whole stuff about giving, is thanksgiving to God. Because when you receive fruit in your account, you'll be like, hey, I got $1,000 in my bank account. I didn't even know. Right? You'd be broadcasting it all around everywhere. What about when God blesses us? Let's be broadcasting it and say, wow, I had more sales than I could possibly have imagined. Wow, you know, I had money to be able to help somebody, you know, do XYZ, whatever it is. So go back to the idea that God is everything. He's our source of supply in every single thing. So that's today's. next week, you want to know what we're doing next week? Yeah, we are going to talk about tithing. Tithing. Oh, no. Yeah. In fact, I'm going to show you from the Old Testament that it's really not possible to tithe the way they did in the Old Testament. Now you're laughing. I know. Okay. It doesn't change the principles, no matter what you call it. And if you want to call it tithing, you can call it tithing. But the actual way they tithed, I will show you what the purpose of the tithing was and why God set it up that way, so that we can understand, again, how to apply it in our day and time. So God bless you.